Welcome back to the Slurpcast. We had some technical difficulties on our last recording, but we're getting wet and wild back here
at episode. Wet and wild? God.
sorry, I forgot. I'm double booked. I have to leave now.
Slurpcast, I think, is... I think when you put wet and wild into it is when it goes from, like, this could be weird to, oh, it's weird.
You are the last remaining bastion of people who went, this could be weird. It was weird. It was weird the whole fucking time.
No, I don't think it's necessarily weird until you explain what the idea of Slurpcast is, because it still could be just about anything.
Yeah, it could be about slushies. We all know. Mm-hmm.
Listen, but here on Watch Mojo's top 10 ices or Slurpees. There we go.
You're killing it, go.
This week we've got a moderately anonymous Magic the Gathering player. Dan, how's it going?
Hey, what's up, everybody? Excited to be here. I don't know why I'm instantly doing the, like, streamy thing. What's
the up? Stream intro.
You unlocked
this week. I'm playing
agent.
This.
Yeah. You can find me on YouTube, etc.
Yeah. Absolutely. Really happy to have you here. I was actually trying to think this morning when I was I went to go get my oil changed, and I was listening to last month's episode, and while we were listening to it, I was kind of sitting there and I was like, man, when was the last time we had Dan on? And I really think it was like for the MLC last year, maybe.
Yes, I think so. It was, I think, MLC related. It was a very long time ago.
Yeah, well, we are changing that and you are here on the show.
I'm the new co-host. What's up, everybody? Welcome to Slurpcast.
Fuck that Ian guy. Ian, how was vacation? You were gone the last week.
Catching some sun, even though I still look like a Victorian ghost. And
did you burn? That's the real question.
I didn't, which is honestly, for several days in Florida, very good for this white Irishman. So
I'm proud of you. Did you wear SPF?
I did. I was rocking that 70.
Were you nice and did you look like a, did you have your like dad hat on that like came out?
I was rocking the baseball. So this is the new cheat I discovered is you wear a baseball cap and then depending on which way you're walking with the sun, you flip around the hat like a douchebag.
This is the hat that you found for baseball hats, is that you could wear it in more than one direction.
Yes,
the sun's over here, guys. I got the fix. No, but sun's legit, over this
like,
way.
I was like, oh man, the sun's in the back of my neck so bad. I'm gonna burn. Whoosh, done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fucking Ash Ketchum, this bitch.
you really. That's your really life hacked that one.
Yeah, I really did life hack it, yeah, for sure. But honestly, the fact that once again I did not burn, although it was my first time like being in Florida with tattoos, and I was definitely like, I understand what people mean about like the sun like making them particularly hotter, and I was like, oh okay, like I mean I was applying a lot, but I was like, oh okay, my like specifically the top of my dust skull and like the middle of fucking Kiki's face were just like and it wasn't burning, it was just hot.
I don't know what it's like out in Philly for y'all, but here in Louisville it is like the fucking surface of the sun right now.
Oh,
it
yeah.
is miserably yeah. hot outside.
Most it's like a little summer, bit better than it's been, but yeah, most of the yeah. summer it is ungodly hot.
Yeah. We've been like cave gremlins just being like, is it the clouds out? Can we leave?
So the other day I had to go like get something from the store or whatever. I don't even remember what I left for. All I remember was it was 105 out and I got into my car and burnt the bottom of my thighs sitting down because the like leather in my car was just so fucking hot. I was just like, hey, and the worst part about it is like it would get humid like that in Lincoln, but the pollen, it didn't have the pollen issue. And so like Cassidy just sounds like she's dying, but it's just her asthma. She can't breathe. So she's like going into work and they're like, are you sure you're okay? Do you like need to go home? And she's like, no, I'm fine. I just can't breathe. Like,
signal of being fine.
I just can't breathe. But that's what's going on out here. I've been trying to avoid it as much as possible, and my way of avoiding that has been replacing Crusader Kings 3 with Baldur's Gate 3, which has
so many good things about
it's
this
so
game.
Good.
Everyone loves
Ian,
it.
Ian, you need to get it and we can play it together. It'll be so much fucking fun.
I don't have time, Kellen.
Neither do I, but I figured it out.
Do you know, we bought, I want to say, 12 games at Gen Con, and we've only just played more Ascension, if anything else.
I mean, do you need other games? Like,
for what I spent? Yeah, you do.
Fair enough. Well, so we're here to do a CEDH power rankings for the month of August. And before we get into it, I just need to put out a little bit of, like, I need to give some context to some of the, like, things that have happened in this month, because it's really hard to, for specifically like Chaos Treasure series, the last one that happened, and potentially others, it's kind of hard to take anything from some of these results, because we did just catch two big cheaters at Chaos Treasure series, and that has it plays a lot into how these numbers are getting viewed. I've been like, I don't know how I'm supposed to interpret this information because some of it is just being manipulated by people who have been cheating. So I want to give some context for mine, is that I try to use numbers as much as I can to inform my top 10, but where I felt uneasy about things, I let my gut kind of kick in and be like, this is where I feel like this fits.
I like, as someone who once, I'm releasing a video about it literally today, but I played against both cheaters in that last Chaos tournament, right? Like, so for anyone else who's in the pods with me, like, it sucks, right? Like, there are people who I know were eliminated because of them, right? So there could be several different decks up here at the top 16, and it kind of sucks that, I had to fight up from the loser's bracket just to, like, make top 16, right? Because I played against two God Hands in a row, right? And it's tough, and it sucks that it's there, and it's something where we can go, okay, but, like, let's look at all of the other available information and go from there and not worry about, like, what could have been, because there's literally no way of telling that, right? So yeah. I'm like, it's like when you have a bit of fruit slightly gone wrong, you eat around it, right? So, like, that's what I'm doing, is I slice those parts off of the information and I'm taking everything else and just running with that, right? So
Dan, in your video you did this past week about how to not cheat in a CEDH event, when I saw the title of the video, I was literally like, oh, this is gonna be like a 30-second video of Dan just going, don't cheat, like
it was more like how to like prevent other people from, like, cheating and getting it proliferated throughout the tournament, but the SEO is better the other way.
I totally respect the SEO grind. So let's just kind of start off here. Let's look at last month's top 10. Let's look at our guest Sam, who had Tyam and Winota as his honorable mention. Then at number 10, there was Timnatana. Number 9 was Dargo Thrasios. 8 was Magda Brazen Outlaw. 7 was Rog Sai. 6, Krark Sakashima, which is a favorite of guests so far. Yeah. 5 was Najeela the Blade Blossom. 4 was Thras Bruce Dawnwaker. 3 was Sisse Weatherlight Captain. 2 is Timnacrom. And 1 is Tivit Seller of Secret. For my good co-host Ian, your top 10 was Dawnwaker and Tevish Dex, just points at them. Number 10 was Timna Malcolm. Number 9 was Sisse Weatherlight Captain. 8, Rog Sai. 7, Dehada Binder of Wills. 6, Kinnan Bonder Prodigy. 5, Atraxa Grand Unifier. 4, Tyam Luminous Enigma. 3, Timnacrom. 2, Najeela. And 1, Tivit. My top 10 was Nimrus as my honorable mention. 10 was Rog Sai. 9 was Kinnan. 8 was Sisse. 7 was Dargo Thrasios. 6 was Atraxa, 5 was Timnacrom, 4 was Tyam, 3 was Dawnwaker, 2 was Dejila, and 1 was Tivit. So, with that information, let's go ahead and look at what our honorable mentions are for the month of August. And because you are our guest, Dan, what is your honorable mention for this month?
Okay, so great little note here about my honorable mention is that I forgot I needed one until right before we started recording. And that's when I noticed that Ian's name on this call is moderately buttfart69. So my honorable mention is Winota.
Fuck, that was good.
Yeah, that sums it up. Winota. Ian, what is your honorable mention?
Well, you know, I didn't actually pick an honorable mention, so I'm gonna shitpost here and say Liberator or is this Battlethopter? No questions, thank you.
Excellent.
Liberator. Okay. My honorable mention for the month of August is Yuriko the Tiger Shadow. Yuriko just keeps popping up.
Yeah.
And it's like not winning as much as I'd want it to put it in the top 10, but right. It's winning enough that I'm like, hey, this should probably be on your radar because it's popping up. So Yuriko is my honorable mention for the month. Kind of a trend for me of picking Nimriss, like last month. So I've got like these, Dimir. You know, back to back Dimir decks.
Just wait for Talion, baby.
Blue black is good.
It is. I mean, yeah, I think that's like, I saw your Nimriss pick from last month and I agree with that as well. Like that's very solid honorable mention pick. I think that like the Dimir decks are like, I think Yuriko is another really good pick for this month too, because like there's a lot of really dedicated Yuriko pilots. Yep. There's a lot of really good lines in the deck that are very devastating to the average like deck and player. And I feel like if they're just like a couple of like really good toys away from being a much better like color pie than simply Dimir.
I certainly agree with that for sure.
So my number one pick is Malcolm Kedis because it's best deck in the format, a top 16 with it. So that's where I'm going to leave my top 10 list for this week and just kind of drop it there.
Yeah. Okay. No notes.
Good podcast. See you later, everybody.
That's it. It was 12 minutes. So let's go ahead and jump in. Number 10 here, Dan. What is your number 10 for the month of August?
For number 10, and a little precursor on my list as well, is that I am not as tuned into the tournament scene as the two of you. I did like reference the EDH top 16 and stuff like that before I made this list, so it's like semi-science involved, but this is more like my gut feeling, and I was also like looking up what sets were released and things like that over the last month to try to do some of this. So I think that you'll probably agree with this pick in particular, because this is also a deck that I'm not very high on, but my number 10 is Atraxa Grand Unifier.
Okay. Tracks a Grand Unifier. What's your kind of thoughts with where you have it, why you like it, why you maybe have it lower or higher or what have you?
Atraxa, I think, like, is not a deck that I like at all. And like the fact that I have it at 10, I think speaks to the fact that I do like recognize that Atraxa is an incredibly powerful monster. It's a very good card, a very powerful magic card. I think 7 is a ton, obviously, like very easy argument to make. But I think one of the like more prime arguments that I would make is that being in four colors is tough. Being in those four colors is really tough because I think it's a four color pie that sort of lacks a really stern identity right now in the meta. Like Food Chain is a solid outlet for this deck and for that win con, but it's certainly not as powerful as other things you could be doing in decks that have a more simplified mana base and sort of just play smoother than that.
Yeah. Well, the one thing I love about Atraxa is that it kind of does what Thrasytemna does, but I do like that it has that inevitability in the command zone.
Yeah.
The biggest issue being, and this is something that Ian and I have talked about quite a bit on the podcast, is that building it in a good, effective way seems to be a nightmare. Because like I've tried several builds of it. I know the community has tried a lot of different builds of it, and it's just like something doesn't quite click.
There's a lot of different ways that you can build out the 99, and I'm not sure that there's one super strong direction that's like, oh, clearly this is the best direction that we should be heading in.
Yeah. Ian, your number 10 for the month of August.
You know, it's, I put Bruce Thrasios here because we did have our wild pile variant make the top four of cookout, right? Which is still pretty recent. I know that, like, personally, I am working to update Dollmaker. You know, I was talking about it with some patrons who were doing coaching with me, and it's basically like Dawnmaker's at a weird point where it's kind of like a control deck, or like think of it like blue white control in Modern or Pioneer, right?
Yeah.
Where there's about 15 to 20 slots that, if they're not correctly targeting the metagame, can take your deck from like a instant top 16 deck to a I kind of got to fight through matchups that I shouldn't normally have to fight through, and then I'm in like any sort of bad variance basically kicks me out of it, right?
Right.
Which is kind of how I felt what happened at Cookout, right? And I know that the deck has to switch around, go a little bit faster, maybe lean a little bit more into Dockside stuff for the Dawnmaker variant specifically. And I like what the Wild Pile list was doing in the fact that the format's getting bigger, right? We have payoffs like Atraxa and Tivit. And when you look at like Seedborn Thrasios, it just doesn't compare. And also people treat it like it's an add-ons, which it's not even close to. And it's oftentimes worse than a single Atraxa resolution, right? So with all that in mind, like I think going a little bit bigger with the deck is kind of important. But right now it's just not sitting well in the metagame in the current iteration. So I'm trying to spend a bit of work to adapt the deck accordingly. But I also have two giant in-person tournaments in a row. And I'm not trying to take a deck that I think is a little raw to those tournaments, you know? So.
I understand. That's kind of where I've been like the last few weeks with like really brewing any new deck or trying a new deck, is because I know that like SCG Columbus is this coming week. So I'm just like, well, I'm not playing either of them there. So I guess I'm just going to not work on it.
Well, that's the other thing, right? Yeah. I Festival of Nights literally tomorrow, which is, I guess, this past weekend when you hear this podcast. But and then I have Columbus.
Because you're hearing this in the future.
No, we're not doing this today. I know I'm wearing the Doctor Who shirt, but we can't go down the timeline. But yeah, I love the deck. I just think it's a little awkwardly positioned at the moment, and I want to kind of make some adjustments.
I think, again, to speak to the four color thing that I was talking about, I think very strongly part of what that is for me is like, what does green do in the CDH meta right now, especially in a four color pile? And it's not a whole lot. Like, it provides you with mana dorks, but like, there's not a great creature color green card like there is like for Mnemonic Betrayal or something like that to really want to pull you in. Or
I mean, the real answer is like it tutors for Dockside, right?
Yeah, like, exactly. Like, you have really good creature tutors, and that's like the strongest thing by far that it does right now. But there are other ways to do it. Like, black does that anyway already.
Right. Yeah, I will argue that green has a lot of redundancy with that. You know what I mean?
It's very true. Yeah, it does provide a lot of redundancy.
Yeah. My number 10 for the month of August it's continuing the downward slide, is Sisay Weatherlight Captain, down two spots from last month. Still a deck that I think is very good. Has a decent amount of top 16s over the last 3 months. Maybe not as many as some other decks, but like, it's got a pretty good number of making top 16s. Its ability to convert those is not great. I think, again, this comes back to something we said last month, where it's a deck you really have to know inside and out. And if you don't, then you're gonna, you know, have a time with it. But overall, I think it's still well positioned. I still think it is the best toolbox deck in the format. And I think it is able to go into a lot of different pods and play completely differently into all of those pods, which is probably one of the things that I think is one of the biggest strengths to the deck, is its ability to pivot onto different lines very quickly and easily. But overall,
I feel like the biggest strength of the deck is actually the ability to sort of layer its wins, right? Like, I don't know, depending on the version, because I've definitely seen people pivot very hard into the toolbox aspect of the deck, right? I feel like the nature in which it can win out of, not out of nowhere, right? Because like, you can see that it has a board state. But the different layers of the winds when you can, you know, respond to a win on top of a win, like that right. type of stuff. When you get the engine going is sort of where its strengths lie. But it also depends on, you know, people's ability to be able to read when that's happening. And also, yeah. you know, the other way around, people can then just go, OK, well, I'm just never going to let them have anything, which is right. not how you should be playing it, but whatever.
yeah. It's a good deck. It's just one of those decks that I feel like got really popular really fast, blew mm-hmm. up, and then it's kind of coming back down to earth a little bit. So I don't think it's in a place that it like it shouldn't be in the top 10, but I do think it's come it probably at a place now where I feel like it's a little bit more reasonable overall. Moving on down the line, Dan, what is your number 9 for the month of August?
At number 9, I got the Bruce Tarle and Thrasios piles, not necessarily just Dawnwaker. I know that other people are like playing more aggressive piles with like Intuition and Breach and stuff like that. Mm. And I think that there's definitely a lot of merits to that color pie. Jeskai is a great color pie, but again, like, what does green do for you? Not a whole lot, but I think green does a lot more for that deck than it does for similar like green plus pile decks.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thrash Bruce is really solid. It's a deck I've never played, even though it feels like likewise. A deck that I would.
It's a very you deck for yeah. sure.
I've never played it. And I think it's because of my like, it's red. Number 9 for you, Ian.
Lightning Bolt, though.
Number 9. I have Atraxa on here. It's, I don't know. Atraxa is one of those decks where it's like, it does well. We talked about it already. You kind of like summarized it pretty well when you mentioned it earlier. I think it's like it does the thing. It shows up. We've had a little bit of trouble like perfecting the list as Dan kind of talked about. Right. I think the like what makes green sexy? Right. Like what is the best thing about green? And for me, the biggest downside of Atraxa is that it just doesn't use green well at all. Right. Yeah. And the people who are like building these like very green heavy Atraxa decks, I'm like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
But like, I think just the idea of like, okay, here we have these green decks and it's basically Tivit with a splash of green. Mm-hmm. And it just sucks that like, okay, you worldly tutor turn one for maybe a Lotho. And like, that's probably one of the best worldly tutor payoffs, but in a deck that's green where you kind of don't even want to play a worldly tutor, like, That's kind of cringe. I don't know. Like, that's a lot.
Yeah.
So maybe this is controversial, but I think Worldly Tutor is so bad now. Like, I don't think that in almost any deck that can play it, I don't think it is worth replacing your draw with a Worldly Tutor.
I think with Dockside specifically, that is the only card that I'm ever excited about. Yeah. Or Seaborn Muse, depending on the deck. But like, that's, you described how I feel about Mystical Tutor. I have cut Mystical Tutor from
same.
A significant portion of my decks, like even ones that have like basically unless I'm playing Ad Nauz, I've looked at cutting Mystical Tutor.
and it's especially hard to want to replace
your draw in a lot of decks.
Mm-hmm. In a lot of decks like what Ian and I play too, where we play some of these more control-y decks, what am I Mystical Tutoring for? Like genuinely, like I'm not getting anything that's gonna win the game. It's like
exactly only like it's very so niche rarely situations. A win con unless I am like loaded up on board.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's I think what we're seeing is some of those cards are getting like some of those staple-y cards are starting to get reevaluated as the meta kind of gets more evolved and grows. Yeah. My number 9 for the month of August is I didn't have it last month, but I do have it this month is Dehada Binder of Wills. Actually just picked up a Dehada so that I can potentially try the deck. Mardu Summer, baby. It has a conversion rate that I think is deceiving. It has a 21.74 conversion rate, which sounds good until you put it through the lens of in the last 3 months. Until you put it through the lens of it's only been played 23 times in that.
Yeah.
And so 5 of those have been like the same person a couple times. So it's like 5 top 16s is great for that number, but like it's a small sample size. I do think it's very strong as a deck. So this is where I'm like, my intuition is just kind of like, I think this is still a good deck. But I do think that there is some people who think it's like one of the top three best decks, and I'm just like, okay, pump your brakes, friend. Like, it's good. It's not great. Yeah. Like, it's,
yeah, it's certainly not infallible.
Yeah. So I was interested in talking about this specifically because it's actually fallen off my list completely.
Yeah.
And because of the fact that, like, literally, I think Zane tweeted today, who is like one of the, I think he made the deck in the first place, right? Mm-hmm. Like, this version of the deck. He was literally like, yeah, after playing Rockside, I don't know why I would go back to Dehada. And it's like, okay, like, if the person who's like fronting this deck is kind of expressing that notion, then maybe that might be a thought worth considering. You know what I mean? Like,
I think, I mean, you can look at like a lot of the social media hype around the deck, and it's like, it's cool to play the deck. Yeah. And that's, I think, part of the appeal. But yeah, like, if you're like, I want to play three colors and I want to go fast and I want to win a lot, why not just play Rockside instead?
Yeah.
I do think there is.
You've been kind of saying that for a while, I think.
Yeah. I do think there is the draw. I do see it, which is why I have it at nine, is you get access to white, and white has some of the best protection spells that you
can get access Silence to. Silence is dope, right?
So like, Silence, Grand Abolisher, Mural, you know, all of those cards are very good. And I think
you and Tide Taker and that type of deck, right?
Like, super solid. So it's one of those things where I think white is enough of a reason for me to be like, okay, if you don't want to play the blue interaction side of it and you just want to go burr, I get it. You have some protection. I like it. I think it's good enough to be in the top 10, not better than some other decks. Moving on to number eight, Dan, what is your number eight?
Number eight, I've got Rogue Raxylus.
Okay, it's not Magda, because if it was Magda, it was going to be the third guest in a row who had Magda at number eight.
No, I respect Magda, but not in that way.
Thank you. Same. So Rogue Raxylus.
Rogue Raxylus, traditionally a deck that I'm not a super big fan of. I don't really like Rogue variants of really any deck. I think that Rogue tends to pull you in an awkward direction where, like, you want to play the culling the weak effects and you also want to play your fierce guardianships, etc. But it's like you only get to really utilize one of those super well.
It's so funny hearing that. Sorry to cut you off, Dan, but it's so funny hearing that conversation, because like we were having this debate like when I was, because I was originally part of the original like collaborative primer for Rog'Sai, right? And this is a debate that has been happening since that original concept, before anyone
for
like,
2 years. I got
the first top result with this deck ever, and it was like we were having that debate on that day, right? So like, it's the fact that even to this day that there is still like a yes, this is the contradiction of playing this deck.
Truly, yes, it is like
that exist.
When you look at everything in the list, it all comes down to that sort of like main contention point of like we're being pulled in two different directions here by wanting to do both of these things. But like, you know, as a lifelong Kess player, as a Kess stan for all the years that I've been playing CDH, I can recognize the faster, stronger deck. But yeah, Rock'Sai, I think a pretty great deck. It takes a dedicated pilot. It's not very good at transitioning to top 16s and taking tournament wins. I guess it's pretty good at taking top 16s. Much less
it's good at getting inning to the top 16, but it takes
over Winota's spot as like the guaranteed top 16 deck, right?
Yeah.
But like definitely has failed to convert a decent amount of times.
Yeah, and I think like once we get up towards the top end of the list and we'll see the difference in like the colors and the kinds of decks that we're talking about and the things that we're saying about them, I think like Rog'Sai very deservedly in the top 10 but not in the top 5.
I also have it at number 8. That's kind of my my look at it is it, hey guys, I moved it up one, chill. Zane got his win in a very favorable pod, in a very favorable meta to that deck. So I'm giving it the credit that it deserves of moving it up. But let's also, this was the thing that I know, and listen, Rog'Sai players, listen, I know I'm living rent free in your head because I see your tweets and I need to let you know, here's the reality of it. Your deck is fine. It's just it's okay that it's not the best deck in the format. It's fine. It doesn't need to be the best deck in the format. It's okay. Listen, my favorite deck is called Arden Kron, and it's not the best deck in the format. And that's fine. Like, it doesn't need to be the best deck. The reality of it is that it struggles to convert. Yes, you got to win. That's fine. That doesn't negate the fact that you are still having the same issues.
Yeah.
You had a good run. That's great.
Yeah, as we move towards like big creature metas, it's really easy for decks that are just like, I'm good at being fast and aggressive to like sort of slip up there.
Yeah.
Listen, Tim Tebow got to an AFC championship game. That doesn't mean that Tim Tebow is a great quarterback. All right.
But for the record, you think that Rock's Eye is a fine deck.
Yeah, we do. Fine. We do think it's a fine deck. But I know I'm living rent free in.
Are you a plurality at this point?
Just trying to get Cal to get themselves canceled.
Yeah.
Well, that's not hard.
Cal is now multiple beings in one, according to Cal.
Yeah. Ian, what is your number eight?
My number eight is K Daddy himself, Kenrith the Return King. So yeah, Kenrith, I mean, it's been doing well lately. Multiple pilots have made top 16 with it. It is perhaps the most boring deck I can possibly think of at the current moment.
Yeah.
Cause like, I don't know, at least Najeela has Samet nowadays. Like Kenrith is just like, all right, so it's a bad Thrasios, but you can play a creature combo and you can play Ad Nauz. Like, I don't know. I used to like, maybe it's just so me. It's being
such an evangelical magic deck. Like,
that's a good way to describe it. I'm a boomer about it too. Cause I was like, Kenrith used to be interesting. They used to play stacks creatures or you could play Birthing Pod. But nowadays everyone's just like, yeah, we'll play Ad Nauz and we'll play bad Thrasios. And for some reason it keeps working. So, shout out to Just Ice for, doing another. I picked up this deck the day before a tournament and top 16 with it, with his Kenrith.
Also new, new patron Just Ice. Thanks for subscribing, friend. It's an evangelical magic deck. That's how I describe it. It's boring. It's you know, like very conservative.
I think it's such a cool card. I think there's so many cool things you can do with it, but I just feel like it's being built in the most boring way possible. And it might be the correct way to build it, but God, it puts me to sleep.
It's certainly not very sexy. It's not doing anything novel at this point, I think, especially.
Number seven for you, Dan. What is your number seven for the month of August?
At number seven, I've got Dargothrass / Rogthrass. And the reason I put Rogthrass on there is not for the Polytyrant list, but I don't know if any of y'all are followers of Sam Black. Sam Black has been posting about his Rog'Sai list, which is not using Rog as a polymorph target, but just as a creature combo deck and like actually fully utilizing Rograk to like cast Fierce Guardianship and Deflecting Swatch of their full potential. I think that it's I like that it's a little bit of a cleaner mana base than some of the four color piles. And I think that it is like generally a sort of underexplored area and where we could be in the Teemer color pie, because I think Teemer is like a generally very strong grouping of colors, like overall in Magic. In CDH, I think it is sort of underpowered because it is underexplored. But yeah, I think there's a lot that could be done potentially with that. And especially like as we continue to go on and get more toys for it.
Yeah. And I think also like worth mentioning, the Polytyrant version has had more top results than it has in a while recently. So like that is also,
it's also a very good deck. Yeah. Like neoforming Dargo into the Tidespot Tyrant is a very good plan.
The Dargothrasios build, like the Rogthrass, I think agreed. It's always been traditionally extremely underexplored as someone who's been working the Dawnwaker server a lot. Like it's like I think it's the most, it's the least exciting version of it, but it's probably like one of the cleanest. But as the Dargo version, I mean, honestly, like the consistency with that deck is pretty crazy, and I've definitely thought about picking it up recently because Freedom's making it look real easy to.
I definitely didn't buy this for anything related. This is a training grounds. Definitely didn't buy it for anything related to
That'd be crazy.
I mean, as someone who mains big brick shithouse in the command zone, like having a big brick shithouse in the command zone is a really fucking good B plan.
For sure.
Turns out, Ian, what's your number seven?
My number seven, Callahan, thank you so much for asking, is Dargothrasios.
Hey.
Nice.
Yeah, no, I mean, so like the reason it's not higher is because it's like, it's Manila Midget and Freedom, and they're the only people really actually putting up results with this list. But Freedom Waffle's taken people to a clinic with this deck, and it's been pretty good, and it's kind of doing everything I'm frustrated that Dawn Waker isn't doing right now.
I think I said that before, where it's like Dawn Waker but faster.
And I think Dawn Waker can adapt to be closer to it, right? And to be taking advantage of the things it's missing on. But I think it's positioned really well right now. Mm-hmm. And honestly, like if you're scratching for Thrasios, I feel like it's probably the place to go.
Yeah.
I think arguably the best Thrasios deck at the moment, because again, to talk about very cards that are not sexy at all, Thrasios is one of them. RIP, I hate to say.
Listen. You watch your tone there, Dan.
I started out playing Flash Hulk and Kess. Those are my two, my interest to CDH, and I will stand them always. But I am also here to say that Thrasios is not the card that it was in 2016 or 2018.
Yeah.
Agreed.
My number seven here is Taiem Luminous Enigma, down three spots. I feel like I saw it kind of take a nosedive this past month, results wise. It has been one of the things that I've noticed the most with it is that the pilots who aren't the brothers and the pilots who aren't the like people who have done really well on it do fine with it. Like, it's fine. I still think that the dedicated pilots like give it the oomph that it deserves. And I think what that shows is that there is potential there for, if you dedicate to it, you can have wicked success with it. But I do think, again, it's a lot like Kinnan. It's a lot like Sisay. It's a lot like those decks that you really got to learn inside and out in order to get their full retail value out of them. And I think, to their credit, like Tuca has absolutely learned that deck inside and out, knows the deck very well. But with that being said, I feel like when people who don't know the deck super well pick it up, it doesn't do as well as you want it to be.
I mean, literally in the deck tech I had on my channel about Taiem to go and, or no, because I had Pixel on, but Pixel was like, yeah, this is probably the most hard to pilot deck in Magic, like, period.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. It's just genuinely like, so difficult. And there's so many decision trees in the deck that like, I can understand just straight up from decision fatigue that it is a difficult deck to play in a turn.
Right. Like, imagine like there's, I've played it a couple of times because I had it sleeved up for a while, and I was just like, it's either doing the thing. And well, I also, I'm not a big fan of a deck that like dies to a single board wipe, right? So like that nature of it kind of disturbs me a little bit. But at the same time, like I just genuinely think it's a deck that is extremely strong when it gets the engine working. But it just, it leaves so many moments for failure. It's the same reason why I never brought Oscar to a tournament, right? Yeah. Oscar was extremely powerful. It was a very, very good deck. But what I kept running into was the fact that you would have to like do the things where you like stacked every single spell you wanted to cast and at the end step with Necropotence, and you had to determine the order as you were discarding them, right? So at that point, it was like, oh, wait, no, I have to like, or maybe not, I think Necrolasia was the one you had to do that with. But either way, like you had to like sequence your ordering perfectly, right? And it was like, okay.
This is too much.
Insanely thought. Difficult and so easy to mess up at a tournament, right? Like, I literally messed up a line the other day where I almost punted my first win of the Chaos tournament because I didn't fetch for Magda at the wrong time. And I was like, oh my God, I just realized this as I was going to my turn, right? And it's like those little micro decisions can mess you up. So like if you're playing a deck that requires 1,000 of those, then it's like, maybe let's not.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Going up to number six, Dan. What do you got here at number six?
At number six, I got Taiem.
Hey.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's a really strong deck. It's one of those decks that I have in the category of decks that I don't quite understand. Like it and Sisay, there are enough different ways to like go about piloting it that I'm never quite sure what is happening. And that's like, that's totally on me. I could study those deck lists harder. But I think it's a genuinely strong deck. And like we said, like it's basically up to the good pilots. It's an easy deck to pilot poorly. And it is a very difficult deck to pilot well, but when you can do it well, it's really good.
I need to just take a moment to point out what this chuckle fuck is doing on our podcast.
He's eating a sandwich. That's fine.
Eating a full
a little chew
sandwich.
It in the mic.
What type of sandwich you got there, friend?
I got a Reuben, but it's a gluten-free, dairy-free one. So, you know, because that's my life now.
What's the dairy that's normally in a Reuben?
Cheese.
Oh, right. Yeah. Of course. I was just thinking about the sauerkraut. I forgot about the cheese.
Also, sometimes the Russian dressing does have dairy, but this one doesn't.
Okay, sure, yeah.
Okay. Ian, if you want to take a break, what do you have at number six?
He clearly doesn't. He's trying to eat a sandwich.
He's like mid-mouthful.
At number six, I have Sisay. What do you like, Captain? I think Sisay is still really good. It's moved up a couple from my last month, just because, I mean, ironically, it's been played less, but I think that's probably actually better for the deck, because sometimes when people hear a deck is good, they just play it, like we were talking about with Taiyam and decks like that, and Sisay is one of those decks that I you know, I tried making very, very clear when I did a deck tech on it, is not simple, and executing the lines correctly requires a lot of three steps ahead thinking. And I think people will love to like one or two step ahead, and they're like, "Yeah, I got this. I've mastered the deck." And you're like, "Yeah, okay. I'm glad you got the dock side lines. Your opponents can figure out the dock side lines, but like, the other stuff is where you need to really like make those micro decisions, right?" So it is a good deck. It's very solid, very difficult to play, but when it does its thing, it's really strong. So that's kind of the thing. I think it's tough because I feel so confident playing it, right? But then at the same time, I don't know if people are going to hyperreact to me playing Mana Dorks anymore, you know? So it's like, it's a weird one where I want to bring it to a tournament, but also I'm not sure where it's going to be. So,
yeah, I get that. I said this last month, I'm going to say it again. This is a deck that makes me really wish that they would ban Dockside so that people could turn their brains back on, because people are just like, "Oh, I get Dockside, it's fine." And it's like, okay, what are you doing with the Dockside mana though? It's like, sure, you've got all that mana. What's the plan? And
this deck dies if Dockside dies, I think, to be honest.
100%.
or not like dies, but like it gets a pretty bad shot in the leg.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, I'm sure it drops several points on the list.
Mm-hmm.
My number six is actually Kenrith. I didn't have it on my list before. I do now. I do think that some of its recent success is helping it a lot. But it is also a deck that I have kind of just looked over in general because it's, again, it's pretty boring. It's a Christian deck. Yeah, it's the Mike Pence of Magic decks. It's about as boring as you can possibly be.
Alex Heyer is rolling over in his alive grave.
It is, but like that's how I feel about it. It's like Mike Pence is like the most boring cookie cutter Christian person I could possibly imagine, and that's what Kenrith is. It's just like, yep, that's good, that's, yep, that's, you got it. And so Kenrith is good. I don't know that I think it's a top five deck, but it's good. So I have a year at number six. Number five for you, Mr. Moderately Anonymous.
And number five, I got to say, and again, just okay. Me and Ian just going tit for tat at this point. But yeah, Sisay, great deck. Has a lot of really good options to it. Difficult to pilot. But again, I think, I guess I'm sort of basing these on, like, not necessarily would I suggest someone take this to a tournament, but rather, like, I think, like, in a vacuum, where is this deck at in the meta right now? And I think that Sisay, like, has enough options and can play well enough and, like, perform the sort of, like, game actions that, that properly circumvent a lot of really common interaction in the meta right now, where I think it's like a very well positioned deck. Very well positioned might be a strong way to put it, but I think it's a very good deck.
Ian, do you want to finish your bite? Do you need me to vamp for a little bit?
No, you're fine.
Okay.
I'm taking these at appropriate times. You're just giving me shit for it, so I'm enjoying my chew.
Your number five, Ian, for the month of August.
I have Rog'Sai.
Rog'Sai. All right.
I know all the cows of the world are going to hate me for it, but I think Rog'Sai is actually extremely strong. I think it's, if you can call a deck a guaranteed top 16 deck, it's a good deck, right? Like it sucks that it can't turn the corner, but like there's a reason I do top 16 breakdowns on my channel, right? And it's not because they're like easy decks to do. It's because it is, especially in live events, in person events, it is hard to make a top 16, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if a deck is going to capitalize upon every mistake your opponents make, if it's going to, you know, take the knees out from your opponents, like if it's going to turn the corner and actually put pressure on your opponents consistently over and over again, and make every single mistake they have in a format where you have to assume people are going to make mistakes, right? If you're going to take advantage of that, it's a deck to do it. And, you know, as you were mentioning, Cal, like with Zane's win in that Surfside tournament, right? It's very indicative of the fact that there was a very greedy metagame being played. And you know who's a great deck to take advantage of stuff like that? Rog's Island. And you know what? Even if they play into a bad metagame, there's still a chance they made the top 16, right? So a deck like that that can completely hose one half of the metagame, while on top of the fact that they can also be relatively consistent in a bad metagame, probably means it's worth being up here at these top numbers.
Right. Very solid reasoning.
Yeah, makes sense to me. My number five is Dargo Thrasios. Like I said before, it is one of those decks that I think is, it's like Dawnwaker, but it can get up underneath decks faster than Dawnwaker can. And one of the things that I really like about it is if you sit down at a table and you go, oh, there's a bunch of other fast decks, it can also go fast. Mm-hmm. And I think that is something about it that is really cool. I love the interactions with Dargo are really cool. And I think the deck is just built in one of the most like I pulled up Freedom Waffle's list and I looked at it and I was just like, I genuinely am like, I have no notes. This is perfect. I have no notes on this deck. Like it's so well built. Just huge, like shout out to them because the deck just looks so good and I see it perform very well in Freedom's hands and I see it perform well. Like, I mean, help Spleenface put it together. Like, I mean, like it's everywhere. So really good deck. I'm a big fan of it. I think it is going to continually get better. So
it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Number four. Wow, my voice just cracked really hard there. Number four, Dan, what do you have here?
Number four, I've got Kinnan, Bonder Prodigy.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, just super solid deck. Creature activations are like one of the most unfuckwithable ways to make an action in CDH right now. And that deck capitalizes on that ability extremely well. Yeah. It also just makes all of the mana in the world. It's a very simple game plan and it enacts itself very well. The thing that I don't really like about that deck, having played it in a couple of different iterations, is that the interaction is a little bit minimal for my liking, and sometimes it's a little bit wonky in the types of slots that people choose to put in their deck. And that, you know, that's again on
you don't like Perplexing Chimera.
Okay, so I played with Tyler a few weeks ago at Ian's house, and I had the full Perplexing Chimera and Homeward Path combo, and I was like, "This is novel. This is good. Yeah. I get this."
Yeah.
But also, would I rather just play a better card than Perplexing Chimera? Yes.
I am the last standing member of the I play Kinnan frequently team, And God, I'm doing my best to not play that stupid card. But honestly, I also played it the other day against it when Wounded Satellite played it in the top 16. And I was like, I am forced to counter this Perplexing Chimera.
Yeah.
F. Like, just big F.
I played with Satellite the week before he won tournament. And yeah, Perplexing Chimera was a constant threat. It's a very good card. It really warps the table, obviously.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know.
I hate that card so much.
There are many options in the world of Magic.
The thing is, though, right? Like, it's like when you don't have Homeward Path, the card is just annoying, right?
Yes.
But when you do have Homeward Path, it's like, oh, it's a soft lock for the table. Cool.
Exactly. And that's the kind of place I don't like to be, is in a position where this card is like good, but if anyone has a piece of removal, then it just sort of gets out of the way. Like, Dranith Magistrate is great because it's 2 mana. And if someone has a Swords to Plowshares before they go off, fine. You probably have more mana and more options to be able to like do more things to be able to stop someone from really getting off.
Right.
But something like Perplexing Chimera, where it's like a turbo player can just sculpt their hand and be like, okay, well, I'll cast this bullshit spell and then I'll get control of the Chimera and then I'll cast my good spell. It's like,
yeah.
It gets a lot worse.
Well, that's why I don't like 7 mana Jingataxis. It's the same thing, right? Because the counter is whatever the first spell is every turn. It's like, okay.
Yeah, great. Things like that are just like, and it's not that it's like, it's annoying to play around, I guess. I don't like things that are annoying to play around. I want things that are like brutal to devastating to impossible to play around.
Yes.
Yeah.
Agreed. Super agreed.
Ian, you're number 4 for the month of August. Finally,
moving out of the top 3, I have Blue Farm.
Chimnacron. Nice.
Yeah. It's obviously stupid good deck. Consistently going to make top 16s. But there's so many people playing it and so few people actually hitting the top tables with it. And there's top 16s a lot, right? And if you give it to someone like Koval, he's going to spank an entire tournament with it, right? But like, it's turning out to be more of a skill intensive deck than I think people thought.
Oh my gosh.
And Najeela's kind of taking the place of like default good deck, I found. Like, a lot of the like people who are medium players are just kind of going over and playing Najeela instead of Blue Farm, which I found.
Because you have a win count in the Kvanza. That's why.
Right.
Like that's the answer.
Yeah.
Like, it's.
Yeah. Najeela is better at idiot proofing itself.
Yeah.
Like, realistically speaking. And I think Blue Farm can punish people for playing poorly, and people are getting tired of being punished for playing poorly, and they want to play poorly and win. So.
If that's not the truest thing I've ever heard in my life, yes.
I think Blue Farm is moving down. I still like feel very confident that if I sleeved up Blue Farm and brought it to a tournament, I would have a very deep run with it because it's a really good deck, right? But like, it definitely has its downsides, and I think Bowmasters really hurt that deck because they're forced to play it, right, to beat the other Bowmasters. But they're also really the only deck playing it nowadays, I found. That card was extremely overhyped. It hit Blue Farm kind of hard, whereas Najeela's like, okay, sure, if I draw a card, which I do sometimes, you can hit my warriors. Like,
it's fine. I still have 17 right? warriors.
Yeah, like, they don't care. And then they're like, oh no, well, I guess I have to pivot to the turbo game plan. Like, you know what I mean?
If only, like, my deck wasn't just mana in tutors.
Right. So yes, I think it has moved down a little bit.
Yeah, I also have Chimnacron at number 4. It is moving up from where I had it last month at number 5. And I think that's solely because I do think it's better than Taiyam. there is that. But I do think the big thing for me with Chimnacron is we've been saying this for years on this channel, that the deck is not a turbo deck. And you have to, we said this a little bit earlier on the show about Thrass Bruce, where if your flex slots are off, the deck will just kind of lose. Chimnacron isn't quite that way because it doesn't have as many flex slots. But it's still a very similar thing where if your read on the meta and your read on the steps to win the game and what tables are going to look like is off, and you don't know how to navigate like different types of metagames, it's not a deck that is going to be consistently doing well for you. And again, it's a control deck. I think there's a reason why pros took a look at it and said, oh, this is a control deck. And I'm inclined to agree with them because the pro who calls it a control deck, who is having the most success with it, Like, come on. So I have Tim Necrom at number four. Let's look at bronze for you, Dan. What do you have there at number three?
Bronze.
Yeah, the bronze.
At number three, I've actually got Tim Necrom, and for a lot of the same reasons that y'all are talking about. And to go off of what you were talking about, Callahan, I do sincerely think that the biggest problem that this deck has and the reason why people don't get as many wins with it is because they are improperly assessing what kind of deck it is and how they should be playing it. Mm-hmm. And I guess to speak to a little bit what we're talking about with Rog'Sai, it's got the pieces of a turbo deck, which can be confusing to your brain when you're looking at sevens and you can be thinking like, well, these cast ad nauseum, so I should be going for that. But the real reason that you want to make five mana is so that you can cast Krom Ludovic's Opus and start controlling the board and drawing cards.
Yeah.
Like people think about seeing Rite of Flame and Lion's Eye Diamond and they say, okay, this is a storm deck. But yeah, like you said, it is a control deck. It's meant to be played extremely patiently, which not a lot of CEDH players like to do. Because it's legitimately difficult when you've got four players and every single turn there's so many game actions. It's very hard to pick your moments correctly.
You don't want to just spend your game putting out fires.
That deck in a vacuum, I think, is extremely strong, obviously. Like, it just continues to do extremely well for obvious reasons. I think if people looked at it more as a control deck that finishes the game with intuition rather than they looked at it as an ad nauseum deck that has a backup plan of casting Krom, I think that people would do a lot better with it. But again, it takes a really patient and careful pilot. People like Brian Koval, who like to play control decks, who like to sit on a brainstorm for 15 turns until they can get their perfect brainstorm fetch land off and things like that. Like, it really requires a very patient hand to play correctly.
Like, I think when you realize that Final Fortune is the best card in the deck, I think you start to understand Blue Farm a lot better.
I recently had a renaissance with Final Fortune where I was, it finally unlocked in my brain. I was like, I understand why I want to play Warrior's Oath. And not just Final Fortune.
Well, so for me, it was like
in that deck.
So Warrior's Oath and like Last Chance, I think, are a different conversation. But like for me, Blue Farm, as you mentioned, it's explosive, but it's patient too, right? And like that's what I am bringing up Final Fortune, because it is one of those cards that allows you to go like, oop, you drop the shields.
Yeah.
Mine. Right. And that's, it's insane how quick Blue Farm is one of those decks that can just capitalize on that window.
Yep.
But you're right. You do have to play the waiting game a little bit for a while. Mm-hmm. You get your value. You stop one person, maybe stop two. You go, okay, now's my window. You're done. Right.
Yeah. So. It's a deck that I personally think that it players across the board would have a better experience with that deck if they took ad nauseum out of it. Because I think it is one of the cards that makes people play it incorrectly. I think if people took that card out and replaced it with, I don't know, just play Shieldred. I don't fucking know anything. Shieldred's really good, but like,
very powerful monster.
It's one of those things where I just keep seeing people like, oh, I got a Turbo Nos. And I just want to be like, just play it without Turbo Nos and then you'll figure it out. And then you could put the Nos back into it and then play it the same way. Yep. And I think that's probably the best way to practice
Betrayal,
it.
You're going to flip Ranger Captain of Eos. Like, there's a lot of three drops in that deck. It's not an easy Nos deck for sure.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Ian, what do you have here at number three?
Number three, I have Kinnan.
Kinnan, me too.
Nice. Kinnan has ascended the ranks. I think the deck's insane. I was literally doing Hands of Sisse the other day, you know, just preparing for tournaments and stuff. And I guess this is going to come out after Festival, but it's the deck I'm bringing to Festival. I just keep like doing these opening hands where I'm like, oh yeah, okay, like I start to get my Sisse game plan online and it's like tutor proof and all that stuff, and then I'm like, okay, but by this time with Kinnan I've made 8 mana and I've played a Consecrated Sphinx with a counterspell backup, and it's like this deck is fucking crazy, right? Like, I did the redemption event at Cookout, which was what happens if you got eliminated from the main tournament and you just missed the top 16 cut, which I did. And then so there's a redemption event that was like the next day, and I just cleaned house with Kinnan. Like, my god, that deck just able to pivot, tutor your stuff out, slam it down the battlefield, just insane, crazy stuff. And I just think it's so strong. It's like crazy strong, and it explodes out of nowhere. It is the fast, it makes Rog'Rek look like a slow deck when you get the Kinnan hands that work well. You have more consistent mana engines, and then it, like, you don't have the Adnaz, right, to like be the busted deck, but like you have the Wandering, you have Consecrated Sphinx, you have your Tyrants, you have like all of these insane cards that just accrue value over and over again. I mean, like, apart from Najila, it's probably the most consistent deck in the format. If you look at top results, like it's it just keeps showing up there. And it takes, once again, it's also one of those decks that is really difficult skill floor, right? We've talked about this a lot, where it's like it has one of the lowest conversion rates for a reason, because people who are bad with the deck are really bad with the deck.
That's me. I'm really bad with that deck. I've tried to play it on numerous occasions, like I said, and like I'm flipping Llanowar Elves for seven mana every time. But it's one of those things where like the one of the reasons why it's so great is because it simplifies your game plan. If all your hand does is make mana, that's exactly what you want. You don't need an action spell. Kinnan is the action spell. You got your A to your B already.
Right. And so Kinnan is like, I was talking about this with someone who is very good. I feel like it was Drake, maybe. But the idea of like a plant and stick commander, where you plant them and then they just do their thing. Sisse does the same thing, right? Where it's just like, you cannot give them an opportunity to breathe, right? But like, you also can't overreact to them or you throw the game to somebody else, right? And like, the thing is, they stay on the battlefield and they just do the thing over and over again and over and over again. And you can't afford to overreact to them, because a lot of the time they're not doing the busted thing. But then the one time they do the busted thing, they untap and then they're winning, right? Yep. And it's like, oh, crap. Like, how did I get out-tempoed by this, right? Like, literally, I played the other day against a person who was cheating with Najila, and we spent most of that game dealing with Kinnan because they got outpaced, because we were like, oh, we have to deal with this crazy Najila hand. And then Kinnan was like, ha ha ha, Seedborn Muse, one ring. We were like, oh, fuck, wait.
Well.
And Najila was not the problem anymore.
Oh, my goodness. That's wild. So this has moved up six spots for me. I did on Twitter like a few months ago, I did a where Cal was right, where Cal was wrong thing. And I'm willing to admit this is one of the things where I was wrong on. I think
so glad that, I hit a short of this.
Yeah, accountability. I was wrong. It is much better than I have said it is. I still contend that it has it. Listen, as somebody who plays a lot of control, I don't find it as like bananas to play against as much, because I'm like playing decks that kind of just always hate it kind of out of games. So it's one of the things that I'm like worried about, but it's more of a, hey, table, let's not overreact to me and just hand the game to Kinnan. Let's remember that Kinnan has 9 million mana on board. And it's one of those things where it's more of an annoyance to me, but I also recognize where it's really good. And I've played against so many people who over or underestimate that deck. And they're just like, oh, what's the big deal? I just have a Kinnan in 14 mana dorks. Like, it's fine. And it's just like, guys, come on. Like, don't let the Kinnan stick around. I've been yelling this for years. And it's just like, it's wild. The reason I know I've been yelling this for years is because before pandemic, we had a guy in our local meta who won our league 1 month with Kinnan. And the next league season, he brought Kinnan again, and people were still disrespecting the deck because he kind of fell ass backwards into winning the league. And I was just like, when are you going to learn your lesson? Like, this is it's still really good. It's still going to finish really well. But at what point are you going to interact with this deck? And it's just. I know it doesn't feel good, but sometimes you need to remove the game. Like, it's just.
I think that's one of those spaces where people can really undervalue tempo a lot, too, because like Kinnan's not scary if it's got 14 dorks on board. It's scary if it's got Voidwinner on board. Right. But like, no, that's one transitions to the other extremely easy.
It pivots into that. Like,
if you can just take them off of four mana on their next turn, like it's usually a pretty big hit if they have to recast Kinnan or whatever it is. Like, those tempo plays can honestly be a lot more devastating than people give the credit for.
Yeah, that's why I've always enjoyed playing decks like Arden against Kinnan, because your deck just kind of hates on what that deck wants to be doing anyway. Mm-hmm. And you're just kind of like, oh, cool. Thank you for playing that dork. I would like to draw two cards, please.
I would like to just pause to make a tangent on the episode here for a second. The problems of living in a two content creator household, for example.
Okay.
I just uploaded my weekly video on Descry Babies. So I just want to throw that one out there. And, that's fine.
Proud of you.
I deleted it. But you know, I was like, huh, why is none of my information in the description? And I was like, well, I've uploaded it to the wrong channel.
These aren't my links at all.
Yeah. So I've had that happen, but with just watching YouTube, because I don't only run as an editor on the Scrybabies channel. I also do it for some other channels. And so when I'm like uploading stuff for them, I won't think about it. And then I'll go browse YouTube like later on.
I have done this.
And I'll be times. Like, why are my recommendations all fucked up? And then I'll look up and I'm like, oh, this isn't my YouTube account.
Yeah.
I have a social media manager and I've done this many times. Why is YouTube suggesting me like Pokemon lore videos? Yeah. Like, because I'm not using my profile.
Yeah. I'll just be like, this is weird. Why am I getting this recommendation? I know I'm not subbed to this channel. And then I just look up and it's a different channel. I'm like, oh, well, that's the reason. Sorry if I ruined your YouTube algorithm.
I'll like find myself watching a hip hop playlist and being like, I am fucking up this woman's algorithm.
Yeah. see, meanwhile, I watch like CK3 playthroughs. So it will be like me watching like 4 hours of people doing like a certain run in CK3. And then I'll recognize them on the wrong channel. I'm like, oops, sorry about that. Number two for you, Dan, what do you have here at number two?
Number two, luckily I only play good decks, so this is one of my mains right now. Najeela, I have at number two. I was in the camp of being like, I'm going to just straight up put down Najeela now that Orcish Bowmasters exist, because in my mind, like, Sama being a new addition to the deck, I was like, this is what I've needed for this deck for so long, and then Orcish Bowmasters got premiered like 2 weeks later, I was like, oh, existential crisis moment. But yes, I think it is showing up, like, inappropriately many decks now, as it sort of should be in. For the most part, and it's far less devastating than I was anticipating. But yeah, it's simple game plan. I love a simple game plan, because it's not that I don't love to think hard about my Magic. My number one pick is a control deck, but I love Najeela just doing what she does, having plenty of pivot points, being able to adapt to a lot of different metas, and just generally playing a lot of really good cards.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I also have Najeela at number two. It is very much a deck that I thought long and hard. I made a tweet about this after Mox Masters, where I was like, or was it Mox Masters, or what was the event that Najeela won recently?
Najeela won Mox Masters.
Yeah. August. Okay.
Yes.
Also placed a second deck in Mox Masters August.
Yeah. So Najeela is one of those things where I was like, all right, am I moving this up? Like, blah, blah, blah. And I think what it really came down to for me is, I want to see it do better at some in-person events, I think, before I throw it up to number one. And my reasoning for that is, this is where the cheating stuff has me kind of sus a little bit, is because you see some people get these god hands, and it's happening a questionable amount. So it's one of those things where, I'm not saying everybody's doing it. I don't think that is what's happening. But I do think there is probably some more people that need to get caught.
As a close friend of mine, I will prescribe you with, this might be a case of classic Callahan paranoia.
I think that there's a point in the fact that, like, Najeela is an extremely popular deck, right? So, like, just based on numbers, there's probably at least a couple cheaters who play Najeela. Yeah. I'm not trying to point fingers at any of the Najeela players who are like topping these tournaments or anything.
Yeah.
Mostly because I don't know who they are.
Players, you're all a bunch of cheaters. You heard it here from Dan.
I'm just saying, by the numbers, one of you has to be.
Yeah. And it's like, listen, I play against Pongo. I know that the deck just has a million and one ways to turn one Najeela. Mm-hmm. But I have yet to see it do like really, really well at an in-person event. And so that's where I'm kind of like, okay, I'd like to see it do better at some of these in-person events.
I think when you like look at the other top decks in a lot of these tournaments,
sure, it was
like
the top four cookout, my friend.
It's kind of difficult for Najeela to enact the main game plan at this point. I thought really hard about putting it at three, because like when you look at the other top decks like Kinnan, Tivit, and things like that, there's a lot of like really difficult creatures to try to push your Najeela and Warriors through. So on that angle, I was like very much thinking about putting it at three, but
yeah.
Number five, Punt City 2, top four cookout. Like, okay. yeah, top four fishbowl, like, yeah.
Well, the fishbowl meta was, I'm just like, that meta game is not the normal meta game.
top six, the Star City Baltimore. Like, it's placed at least one or two in top 16 of every major in person.
But again, like, that's like what I would expect. I'm talking about like winning the whole things. Like, when it like gets like one or two where it wins a whole in-person thing, I will feel more comfortable moving it up, if that makes sense. Just because of the fact where I'm just like, okay, there's some stuff that's gone down, so I'm just a little sus. But again, I'm not so sus that I'm like throwing it out of my top 10 or my top 5. It's still my number 2.
No, I fully agree. It could win more tournaments.
Yeah.
It could be slightly better.
Yeah. Ian, what do you have at number 2?
Well, Kellen, thank you for asking. At number 2, I think we have our ones and twos switched up. I have Tivit.
Yep.
Tivit's just, I think we can all say we both have, well, all three of us have Tivit and Najila as our top 2, right?
Yeah, Tivit's my number 1.
Tivit's cool. My number 1.
So my argument is that Najila's been doing better in the hands of more people at the current moment. So
I think that's...
Also, I've heard, mathematically speaking, you're very likely to have a turn 1 Najila and Samet in the opening hand, so... Statistically speaking, it's really good.
I mean, on that angle, like, I do agree that it definitely has that edge, because you can't just Jeweled Lotus and play it. Like, you can play a turn 2 Tibbet. Yeah. It is extremely difficult. Playing a turn 3 Tibbet is a lot more feasible. Yeah. But it's a huge fucking difference between playing your aggressive commander on turn 1 versus turn 3.
The two best, I think there are three best Jeweled Lotus commanders in the format right now, right? Which is like Armix, Malcolm, and Najila, right? Mm-hmm. Like, all three of them are just like, Jeweled Lotus crack, have my commander, it's ready to go, guardianships align, all these things, right? Yeah. And it's very trivial, I think, to argue that Najila is by far the best of those options, right?
Yeah,
it is literally a win con in a can, right? Yeah. So I think any game where you have a Mana Crypt or a Jeweled Lotus, right, it's gonna look insane, because the deck's crazy, right? Like, it is crazy fast how quickly that deck can move, right? Like, I mean, most of my Malcolm decks are built around getting down Malcolm turn 1.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it is comically easy to do the same thing for Najila. So I think it's going to look like it has the potential of exploding more. And while, yes, we obviously had Big TP be kicked out for cheating with that deck, right? I do think there have been so many different pilots top 16 with this and top 4ing, and we had one person who top forward that Mox Masters event and top forward Cookout, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there's just like crazy stuff. I'm pretty sure the person who won actually won Mox Masters August and then top forward Cookout. So it's like, it's really hard to argue that the deck's doing well. Memo's had the craziest streak of any player this year, right? Just with this one deck.
Fantastic pilot.
And it's just like, it's I don't know. It's clearly the best deck in the format, in my opinion. And then Tivit is awesome. Tivit's super strong. I have no problem putting it up here in these top 3. I don't think it's going to leave the top 3 anytime soon. And it's one of those decks that I play and I feel super consistent with, right?
Mm-hmm.
But as of the past 2 tournaments, it's actually been surprisingly out. And who knows if that means, or I'm not out, right? It's still a bunch of top 16s, right? But it hasn't made top 4 in a hot minute. And that might just be because all the cheaters keep winning. But like,
that's kind of my thing right now, where August, that was kind of why I didn't want to move my 1 and 2 too much, is because it's like that we had this all kind of come out, and now I'm just kind of like, I don't know that I feel super comfortable making big sweeping changes to my like rankings, because there's just so much that's been skewed by the fact that we've had cheaters doing this stuff. So it's like, I don't know how to parse that information of, oh, well, Tivit hasn't made a top 4 in a minute. Well, why is that? And so it's like, and I think you do have to try and like untangle that to some degree. Mm-hmm. And it's, I respect your decision. I think your decision makes total sense. I'm so, like, for mine, it was one of those things where it's like, I want to wait and see how the meta shakes out. And it's just I think Tivit's still really good. I think Najila's still really good. I think you can interchange them. But it's just, can people just stop fucking cheating for like come on. Jesus Christ.
I wish and hope. One thing I think about Tivit being in my number 1 position, and I'm interested to hear what the both of you think about this. And keep in mind that I have an anxiety disorder.
Okay.
I think that Tivit is sort of like tentatively number one. I think that like much like Winota, maybe not to the same degree, but I think that Tivit could be controlled better in the meta with a meta shift. I think that there are certain things that people could do with their deck building and like playing philosophies that could sort of absorb Tivit a little bit better. But I think that people continue to play poorly into it. But I'm interested to hear what y'all think about that, because you definitely have more experience playing more people on the deck.
Yeah, as someone who can never get away with playing Tivit, right? Like, it's never like people let me have shit. And so like I'm never going to have the pulse on like what people are letting people get away with, right? Because I'm never allowed to get away with fucking anything in this format, right? But like what I've noticed is that because once again, Ward 3, right? It's it's a real thing and it's pain in the ass. And then on top of that, Tivit has a really good, like half of my coaching sessions are like, okay, these are what I call the mini Tivits, right? And I go through all of the different cards in the deck that are not Tivit that you can play that still accrue value, right? Your One Rings, your Rhystic Studies, your Esper Sentinels, your Douthi Voidwalkers, your Ranger Captain of Eos. And if you notice, I'm still going. Right? There are all of these little cards that are just like value engines that get you to this insane consistency engine payoff that is Tivit, right? And because of that, it's like, how do you attack a deck that has so many different axes to which you can just pivot, right?
Right.
It's definitely a Winota, where people can just be like, oopie doop, kill Winota. And you're like, all right, thank you. There was a player who's about to combo right now.
That diversification of different value engines is really important, because it's not the same thing where I think, like when I look at the deck and I think about the things that made me initially really excited about the deck, things like Grafdigger's Cage and things like Curse Totem, pieces that are really hateful to a large part of the meta that are like sort of underplayed and undervalued. I think that maybe there are some of those out there, and I think that Board Wipes is part of that equation of like a Board Wipe is very good against the average Tivit board generally. But you're right, there's enough diversification between the different value engines that you can have that it makes it not just a one card answer for sure.
And the crazy part is like Tivit plays Board Wipes too, right? Like
yes, exactly.
I don't really care about my board that much. Sometimes you'll hit my Hate Bear that I was like, ah, that was kind of helpful. But then it's like, oh no, now I have all these Esper spells. And it's like,
yeah.
Like, how do you hate this deck? It's Collector Roof or Bust, right? Like,
yes. Dockside Extortionist will make me sad, but not 100%.
That is true. Sad. That's why Blind Obedience exists, to be fair.
Yes, very much so. I learned my lesson going off and on that card.
I've had so many games with Tivit where I can sit down, look at the board, look at my position in the table, and go, okay, this is the game plan we're doing. And there have been games, I had this in the game I should have won at Chaos, but that's its whole other story. They were just like, I was going last, and they're just like, oh, wow, you've like not played any artifacts. And I'm like, okay, well, there's been a Mystic Remora, a Rhystic Study, another Mystic Remora. Like, I know where I'm at this table, and I know that I'm playing a long game, and I'm not going to just feed your Docksides. So like there were Docksides in that game that were only for like three mana at points. And I was just like, yeah, like sometimes that deck, if you just kind of sit on cards and you're just kind of like, all right, well, I'm just going to sit here for a minute and let things play out, and I'm going to hold up this mana drain. And
yeah, it's definitely another one of those decks that plays extremely well if you can play it patiently.
Yeah.
I miss Notion Thief. I'm just going to throw it out there. Orcish Bowmasters has done like two things to the format, if you really count it. And like one of them is make Notion Thief unplayable. And it was one of my favorite.
I'll tell you.
And it's dead. And
I know. So all right. That was initially one of my main pulls to it, too. I was like, I haven't played a Notion Thief since like 2020. I'm definitely
not so good in the scenario that Cal was talking about, where everyone's just like, oh, you're not going to play your mana rocks because you're in the mid-range deck. And it's like, okay, Notion Thief, fuck off. Like,
you know what has been good though? It's Shieldred. I kid you not. I have won so many games with Tivit because of Shieldred.
So I've been playing a ton of Shieldred and Constructed, and I am now a Shieldred convert, where like before I was like, this is obviously a strong magic card, but like seeing it and then thinking about it in the context of EDH, where like the average player can't remove a Draenith Magistrate.
Right.
So if I have a Draenith Magistrate and a Shieldred, then I'm cooking.
Yeah.
My experience with playing Shieldred is nobody can remove it, and people just sit there and they're like, oh, I'm at four life now. And you're just like, and people don't think, like, people don't really think about it at first because it's like, oh, it's just two mana or two life.
Exactly. Like mathematically 40 life, 2 damage. It's not a whole lot, but it adds up so quickly when it's I've got Timna draws and things like that. Yeah.
Well, most people, to be fair, start the format at like 30 life, right? Like if we're talking about like the fetch shock mana base and like all of these things and you know, your Imperial Seals and all that garbage, right? Yeah. Like
it's one of those things that I think honestly, Ian, try switching out Shieldred for Notion Thief, and I think you would like it a lot. It plays really well in that slot.
I cut Notion Thief a while ago. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, but same. I think I still got Karn the Great Creator, though, so maybe that's my 4 drop.
Well, that's so. This is one interesting part. This is turning into a Tivit podcast, but the Karn slot's always weird for me because I'm always like, I don't want to ever leave back Tivit, but it's such a good protector of Karn.
Yeah, you know? I feel fine leaving back Tivit. Especially now that I'm on what's it called, the channel enchantment,
touch of the spirit realm.
I've found that card has made me not as aggressive with swinging Tivit, and it's been to my benefit a lot because I can just that card makes me play more controlly, and every time I play a card that makes me play more controlly, I play better in that deck. So
I feel the same way. It's one of those decks where like I looked at it, the pieces all made sense to me when I started playing it. I was like, these game plans make sense to me. They just instantly fit like a glove, where I was like, I really understand what the game plan is, again, because it's quite simple. Like, obviously you just want time sieve, but it also like navigating different board states. It just feels really simple because the deck is just full of answers. It's got a really good array of answers for the most common things in the format.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Yeah. Well, that's our top 10. Dan, thank you so much for joining us. If people who are a fan of our podcast and don't know who you are, where can folks find you out there on the interwebs?
Well, thank you so much for having me on. This was a ton of fun. Very much enjoyed this discussion. This was very fun. If people want to find me on the internet, you can do it by finding me on Twitch. I am there live every Saturday and Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern, playing mostly CDH, but sometimes some Legacy, Vintage, other Eternal formats. And you can find me on YouTube as well. I put out edited CEDH gameplay videos as well as philosophy and learning documents. And thank you again so much for having me. This was a great time.
Yeah. Dan is...
And if you want to see Dan on new episodes of the Slurpcast, you can check those out every Thursday night at the Slurpee Hour.
Yeah, me and Ian are going to record the Slurpcast right after this. So find me on Apple Podcasts.
With Wild Cherry Spotify. Dave. awesome. Well, so as far as things that we're going to be at over the next few weeks and events that we have going on, Ian, you and I are going to be this coming weekend are going to be in Columbus with Tyler at SCG Columbus. So you can catch us there. We will be playing in the tournament, though. So, you know, I don't know how much.
We're going to have our gamer goggles on for sure.
We're going to be going hard gamer mode. But I'm super excited because I'm going to be playing in my hometown. So it's a little bit of a homecoming for me.
I would like to know for the listening audience that Ian really liked the phrase hard gamer mode. I could see on his face.
That's true. You got me.
Ian, as far as events you're going to be at here in the coming weeks, what's going on your schedule?
Well, thanks for asking, Callahan. This weekend, which will be last weekend by the time you hear this, I'm going to be at Festival of Nights, which is an event here in Philadelphia, run by Eminence Gaming. It'll be cool. I'll be playing Canon. We'll see what happens there. Then, this next weekend, as I mentioned with Cal, we'll be there at SCG Columbus. And then at 9:16, the halfway through the month, Eminence has put on an event called Bonfire, which is sort of like if anyone is at Scrybaby's Fest, but basically it's going to be like a really chill, not like big tournament thing, but like come, you know, like walk in the door is free. There is a side event that I will be like co-sponsoring basically, which is going to be like a 60 person CEDH tournament that I'll be casting, and we're figuring out logistics this weekend at Festival, so I don't know all the details yet, but it's going to be like the first ever comedian MTG sponsored tournament, which is going to be kind of a cool fun thing going on.
Nice.
So that's gonna be 9:16 in the place where Punt City is normally held.
Nice. So
that hotel.
Nice.
Oh, there's also a bunch of other TCGs doing side events. So if you're the Pokemon or One Piece and all that shit, that's all
out there. And I may be going to that. I'm not sure yet, but we'll see. Well, awesome. Make sure if you are a Rogside pilot and you need coaching, go check out Ian's Patreon, where you can go and get mm-hmm. coached. Or if you're a Sidisi pilot and you need coaching, also you could go see Ian's.
I did have Lime Blue message me out of nowhere, who is the primer author for Sidisi, and I forgot that I had said that on this podcast. And they said it was the equivalent of like, fuck you and your coaching. And I was like, I don't remember what I did to offend you.
It's nice to know people do listen to the podcast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, you'll get, there's no surer sign than hate mail.
It's so fun. That's one of the things that's been really funny to me, is because I'm like, oh man, do people really even listen to the show? And then yeah. like the last month, I've just seen like all these Rog's Eye people basically like literally quoting me from the show, and then be like, wow, look at it now. And I'm just kind of like, good to know I'm living rent free in your head. That's awesome.
For clarification, Lime Blue and I are on good terms. It was a shit post.
Yeah.
This is not like be ready to burn down my house.
Lime Blue, that's great. I love it. You know, and like I said, Lime Blue, Ian is available for coaching.
It's true. He's a smart guy.
You also offer some other stuff, Ian. What else is available at your Patreon?
Oh boy, come watch the Comedian MTG, largest tournament CDA's channel. I don't know why I'm going full Rick and Morty.
Why is he talking like this?
Boy.
Oh boy.
Oh jeez. I don't know about this one, Rick. I don't know about this one, Cal.
I'm glad you brought it up, because I was about to explode.
If you want to hear more about the tournament scene than just once a month, you should come check out Comedian MTG. If you want to hear about how I made top 16 with Malcolm Kettis, which is a deck that people weren't even beginning to talk about, you should come check that out. I have a video that dropped as of the day of this recording last Friday about that. A lot of cool stuff. Going to be breaking down Columbus, going to be breaking down Festival of Nights, all sorts of CEDH content, especially tournament related. Find it there. I have a lot of really cool stuff with the coaching, as Cal was mentioning, you know, one-on-one individual coaching, as well as I'm doing some gameplay coaching, which I'm still getting details ironed out. Should have that up and running as of next week, which is really cool. And then doing some other side projects. I have a project with Charles, the Monoway guy, that I'm excited to drop, which is a giant shit post, but I'm really excited.
That's amazing.
This is the first spoiler of that I'm going to
drop. I'm very excited about this. As far as supporting me and us here at the Mind Sculptors, you can go over to patreon.com/themindsculptors, where you can get access to the Discord server. I do want to give a major shout out to Just Ice for subbing this month. It was really awesome, and we're trying to get more people in there so we can be more active. I noticed the activity died down considerably when Phoenix kind of stepped back from Magic, so I was like, all right, well, I guess we should probably figure this out. So we're trying to be more interactive in that server, so please come check it out. You can also, if you want to support the show, go check out dragonshield.com and the link in the description. That goes straight and helps us out. What I've been using on my cards for 8 fucking years. With that being said, from everybody here at the Mind Sculptors, I'm Callahan. We'll see you next time.
And I am also Ian. Goodbye.
I am also Callahan. Goodbye.
That I'm trying to keep, yeah. All these memories, bittersweet, yeah. Gotta move, can't stay here no more. 여기 계속 있다가 남아서 내가 돼. 'Cause we can't keep making these rain clouds stay overhead. Don't wanna keep this going. Can't fix what's already broken. 생각을 돌이켜봐도.